I'm Jean Marie Laskus. I'm a journalist. I spent my career helping Americans understand the lives of other Americans. Coal miners, gun shop clerks, staffers in the White House mailroom. In my new podcast, Cement City, I tell the story of an entire town. A dying town that you have absolutely no reason to care about. But trust me, you will. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
8:14, call it 8:15 on this Monday morning, October 28th. Foggy as all get out. Be careful. Flashers on only if you're stopped. Have the headlights on low beam. And please be careful and considerate. Remember, the right of way is not something you have. It's what people give you. And if they don't give it, you don't have it. Simone Malaz. Did I get that right?
Good morning, Tommy.
I'm suddenly confused. Simone, tell me how to say it.
We say Malaz.
Simone Malaz. Yeah, I think I got the fog in my brain this morning. Joins us, campaign director.
That kind of morning.
Yep, director for Restore the Mississippi River Delta. Been a tough weekend. Let's talk about the Mississippi River, the Mid-Bear Terrier sediment diversion, where that stands now, and what kind of money the state could be on the hook for. Let's talk about where the money... First of all, let me take a step back, slow my roll a minute. We all know about it. You and I have discussed it extensively, but for people that know of it, don't know about it, explain, if you will, how long the Mid-Bear Terrier sediment diversion has been in the works and the scientific research behind it.
Yeah, thank you again for having us on, Tommy. We're so pleased that you stay on top of this topic. It's really important. It's not just about one parish. This is really about a much bigger project with a regional impact, but how we're really thinking about our coastal future. And part of that includes this idea that we've needed to reconnect to the river. And that idea has been around for decades and decades, probably since we cut the river off, right, with the levees all those years ago. This idea that we need to go back to that system where we get that fresh water and sediment that helps build our coast, because we've talked about this before too, right? We sink, saltwater intrusion, all these things happen to us. So returning back to that natural system that built us here at the sole of the boot of Louisiana is really just the backbone of how scientists think about how Louisiana's coast should be. But that takes, different shapes over time. But this particular project has been part of Louisiana's important coastal master plan for a very long time. It's also, been in study on this particular project and this particular place and size for 10 years. It took 6 years to get a permit to permit this project. So we've talked about this a couple of times, Tommy. This is not an overnight idea. This is not an experiment. There are places along Louisiana's coast that are reconnected to the river and are building. We went to Wax Lake Outlet in the Atchafalaya Delta just last Wednesday. It is unbelievably healthy. It's unbelievably productive from an ecosystem standpoint. And we've talked about Neptune Pass before as well. So there are real world examples of these projects. And this is something that's been studied and looked at by some of the smartest people for many, many years.
So with that being said, who would be against it or who is against it?
Yeah, there are certainly folks that are opposed to the idea. It will impact fisheries. Those fisheries have changed over time as Louisiana has lost land and has impacts to fisheries, and it has impacts to some of those communities in Plaquemines Parish. But that was also very carefully thought out. There's $378, I think, million dollars in what they call mitigation. There's something else that's called stewardship, Tommy, that's a little above and beyond what is required. Mitigation is something that you're required to do to offset impacts. And so that as well was carefully thought out. They sent out surveys to different communities, had them reply with their feedback on impacts they may have. And they actually changed the draft to the final and increased mitigation based on some of those replies, based on some of that feedback there. We do hear a lot about impacts to oysters and to brown shrimp, but there are benefits to other species, including white shrimp, red drum, blue crab, some of those other species there too. That's not talked about enough there.
I don't know if you want to get involved in this or not, but I'm quoting from an article written here by Mike Smith at NOLA.com. It says the plan includes $378 million to assist those impacted by the project. Commercial fishers, however, say that's not nearly enough and have mounted a campaign against the project with Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser, former Plaquemines Parish president, and now Lieutenant Governor, obviously, among those advancing their arguments. So I'm just wondering if this is about special interests trying to hold the whole thing up to get a bigger payday, and if so, what are the effects of delay in this as far as nature is concerned? And there are some financial concerns as well with the federal government. We'll talk about that in a minute. Let me take a break, Simone. As a matter of fact, I look at the clock now. With fog, it's time for traffic. We'll pick it up there. We come back, all right? About
right,
time frame
sure.
on all of
Thanks,
this.
Tommy.
You bet. Simone Malaz, our guest, she is the campaign director for Restore the Mississippi River Delta. I don't know, but just trusting the science on this, and there have been fishermen that have come out. I've asked for it, the Mid-Barataria Sediment Diversion. I've asked repeatedly different sources of this is a case of where fishermen and oyster people would just have to go back to where they were before coastal erosion started. And I've always gotten the answer, yes, that's exactly what's happening. That's why there is money to help them deal with going back to where they had to go originally. We'll pick it up when we come back. 821 traffic now, WWL.
This is Jean Marie Laskus with the podcast Cement City. So there's this election coming up, a big one, and one guy's been indicted. People are talking voter fraud. Democracy itself is on the line. Sound familiar? Well, this isn't that election. This one is in Denora, Pennsylvania, a dying town in the middle of nowhere, where I bought a house and stayed for 3 years. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
8:27 half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to our friend Simone Malaz, campaign director for Restore the Mississippi River Delta, about the Mid-Barataria Sediment Diversion. Quoting from that same article from our friend Mike Smith at NOLA.com, State Representative Joe Ogeron from Golden Meadow, or as y'all say, Golden Meadow, among lawmakers raising concerns over the delay, sent a letter to colleagues saying that he sees the urgent need to build a project. He said the discussions of the operation of the diversion were legitimate, but redesigning it should be out of bounds. I see redesign as a continuous stall tactic, or maybe a it'll-never-get-built tactic. And this guy represents the areas of Jefferson and Lafourche that have seen major land loss. Fishermen want more money, I guess. I don't know what's stalling the project. The state could be on the hook for $500 million of the federal government, money they've already spent. Tell me what happens going forward, Simone, and what happens, how costly, not just financially, but are delays in terms of what the sediment diversion could accomplish and how much more, how deeper we get in the hole, I guess would be a good way to put it.
Yeah, Tommy, one thread I want to pick up on and continue is, this idea that Louisiana has this coastal master plan that we are so proud of. Louisianians should be proud that we have this plan. Other people are envious of us because we have this science-based master plan. But it does have to be approved by the Louisiana legislature. So every 5 and then turn to 6 years, it has to see these approvals, those kinds of things. But that is something that we've been very proud of, is the science part of this. And so that's when you don't want politics to be a part of it. But you mentioned Representative Ogeron and Senator McMath from Covington, also after a Senate committee hearing on this topic. He was talking about, Senator McMath was talking about the delay as well, and he said it just so well, pretty clearly, what happens if the delay continues. One, that we're going to continue to lose land, and the people of Southeast Louisiana are going to be more and more and more vulnerable to hurricanes and flooding. And two, we're going to owe the federal government a boatload of money and have nothing to show for it, which would be an absolute disaster for the people of Louisiana. So Senator McMath kind of summed it up in those terms. And, they've already spent $519 million on this project. And so what do we have to show for that if we do not continue moving forward with this project? Tommy, I've been on the show before talking to you about money and how we need money for the coastal program. People may, y'all have all that Deepwater Horizon money. No, we don't. That money runs out. We are trying to spend it on projects just like this to mitigate for that injury. And then if we want to keep up Louisiana's coastal program and the restoration projects and the protection projects that are protecting our communities and protecting our way of life, we have to be able to find money, spend money, prove that we do good things with our money and that it's not based on political decisions. And so there's so much wrapped into this one project, and that's something that we don't take lightly. That's why it took 10 plus years to begin to implement this project and why we broke ground well over a year ago.
Thank you, Simone. Appreciate your time as always. We'll stay on top of it. Simone Malaz, Campaign Director for Restore the Mississippi River Delta. Quick break, 8:31, minute late. Time for WWL First News. Snuck a look out of the window. Foggy, foggy, foggy. You can't see the Crescent City connection from Poydrason Magazine. He said it's supposed to lift by 9 o'clock. It's going to have to hurry up if that's going to happen. We're under a dense fog advisory. Be very safe as you drive around. And I'll remind you that if you missed any part of what we talked about this morning or any of your favorite hosts here talk about on WWL, you can have this show delivered directly to your phone absolutely free. You can listen to all 4 hours, one specific hour, or just the hottest clips. You just download the Odyssey app and follow me, Tommy Tucker. It's that easy. We realize you can't always listen to the entire show live, so Odyssey makes it easy for you to listen when you want, how you want. That goes for me or any of the WWL shows you love. You just download the free Odyssey app today, or take control and just tell your smart speaker, play WWL. I say that because if you go to WWL.com, you'll find my name, Tommy Tucker, and you'll see an interview we did last week with Maureen Molak. She was a lady that lost her child to cyberbullying, and she was in favor of the Kids Online Safety Act, or as it's otherwise known, COSA. But that's not the way everybody feels about it. Josh Withrow joins us now, fellow in technology and innovation at the R Street Institute, to say why he thinks it's probably not such a good bill or a good idea. So I just wanted to give you that note about the Odyssey app so you could go back and listen to what she had to say. With that, we welcome in Josh. How you doing, Josh?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Tell me about the Kids Online Safety Act for those that don't know what it says or calls for.
Yeah, so the Kids Online Safety Act is a multi-part bill, but sort of the core of it is what they call a duty of care. And basically, it says that for online social media platforms, they have this like fiduciary duty to design their websites in a way that prevents kids from being exposed to content that might cause various kinds of physical or mental harms to them. And the problem is that it defines these harms in such a way that are so broad that and subjective that it could, essentially give regulators the capability to define very broadly large amounts of speech that websites would have to prevent exposure to. And that includes things that may cause, in the bill, the following mental health disorders: anxiety, depression, eating disorders, substance use disorders, and suicidal behaviors. And so, of course, how you define that ends up getting left with, depending on which version of the bill you have, various government regulators. And it could, of course, encompass anything that, you know, what causes you anxiety. If you can imagine that, that's how broad the speech is that they might be forced to control under this bill.
I'm an absolutist when it comes to the First Amendment. This applies to just social media is what we're talking about here, or what, specific sites?
Yeah, as they have it defined in the bill, it would apply to larger social media platforms. They've tinkered around with the threshold of like how many websites or how broad it would apply to, but it would certainly apply to all of the large platforms you and I know, like, you know, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, those sort of things.
So take me through that again. The bill says that you would The bill says that things that would cause eating disorders or anxiety could include advertising, is what you're saying, or not?
It's basically any kind of content, right? So, yeah, it's mostly, I think this is mostly applying to third-party content that is actually posted on the sites. And so, what I think the bill sponsors are trying to get after is the idea that that these websites' algorithms are feeding kids content that they, that they don't want or don't need to be exposed to. In practice, because of the liability that's imposed on these sites, if basically it allows state attorneys general to compile these cases and sue websites for exposure to any content that's listed under here, and websites would therefore have the incentive to basically take down anything that they get challenged on, and that could include anything that any parent convinces an attorney general is causing their kids anxiety.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back. I see the logo for your organization is Free Markets Real Solutions. We'll talk about what a free markets real solution, in your opinion, would be to this, because I presume, would you agree there is a problem with social media and kids and suicides and cyberbullying and all that, or not?
I agree that instances of these problems exist. Whether it's generalized, I might contest that.
Okay, we'll talk about it when we come back with Josh Withrow, Fellow in Technology Innovation at the R Street Institute. You can tell me what you think on the Oakland Art Jeweler Talk and Text line at 504-260-1870. Do you think there needs to be regulation when it comes to kids and social media? Or is that, I presume what Josh is saying, that's up to the parent to take control over? Although if you go back and listen to what Maureen Molak had to say, she says it was something deep and dark and beyond what you could control. 8:51, and I'm paraphrasing that. 8:51, 9 till 9, traffic now, WWL. 8:55, 5 till 9, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Last week we spoke with a lady who lost her son to online bullying and cyber safety. She's in support of the Kids Online Safety Act, KOSA, and she was calling on Steve Scalise, Mike Johnson, et cetera, to get it in the House. I think it passed the Senate, or like 97-3. Is that right, Josh? I remember that correctly?
That's correct, yes.
All right, now they want the House to take it up. So let me read a couple of texts here, and then we'll get back to what I asked you before. All of the data and majority of experts agree that social media has a negative effect on kids. Somebody else said, of course, there should be regulation, even though TV and radio are more lax than before. There are still things you won't see in here, so that should be on the web. Somebody else said, could you ban every kind of presidential campaign, please? It causes stress, anxiety, and depression. I guess that was said kind of tongue-in-cheek. And somebody else said, people need to learn how to not put themselves into a compromised position. Are social media sites absolutely necessary? I guess you could have a debate about, are we better or off with or without social media, but that doesn't matter because it is here and it's not going away. I mentioned earlier about real solutions, free markets. How would you ideally like to see this done? Is this up to the parents to control their kids and regulate the social media usage? And is this something where you think the government's getting in the way of the parents, or parents are trying to farm this out to government maybe?
Yeah, I do think in terms of something as broad of a law as COSA, just regulating sort of all speech and how sites should be structured, I do think that's far too broad. And I think that needs to be left at least more up to the parents. Mm-hmm. And it's because, the scientists who are trying to study what kind of effects social media actually have on kids have kind of agreed it's neither inherently harmful nor inherently beneficial. It's completely context dependent, right? So content that might be harmful to some kids might be completely innocuous to others, and vice versa. And it's one of those things where, a kid's maturity depends on a given age as well. So attempting to regulate the speech on an entire platform for all kids and all parents is inherently going to, take some opportunities away from folks who would be fine with it, and vice versa. So I do think that to a large extent, this should be left to households to determine. And if there's a government role, it might be in helping parents figure out how to navigate that.
So you're no stranger to political environments and contexts. Tell me why this passed with such bipartisan support out of the Senate and why the House seems reluctant to take it up. Are they?
Yeah, well, I think I don't think there was a whole lot of critical debate on this bill in the Senate, to be perfectly honest with you. It kind of rushed through and just sailed through the process. So there was a bunch of senators in the committee who expressed concerns with it, but basically kind of just let it slide. In the House, I'll give credit to Speaker Johnson and Majority Leader Scalise, is that the objections they were raising to this bill are very similar to the ones that I would, in terms of they've realized there are real, like, potentially constitutional and structural concerns with respect to free speech that are inherent in the structure of this bill, and that just make it, you know, even if the bill were to pass, there's a pretty good likelihood that at least large chunks of it would get struck down in court anyway because of the way it affects free speech and access to speech.
Would you support any kind of bill if it restricted any type of content on the internet for kids or what they saw, or is that strictly up to the parents because you said it depends on the context and the content?
I mean, sure, there are certain kinds of content that I think absolutely everyone can agree we want to protect our kids from, and that obviously includes things like pornography. You know, when it comes to broad categories of speech like that, there already are laws in place to try to prevent sites from exposing kids to that. I think those should be enforced. But when it comes to contextual speech, like, you know, the sort of things that might cause anxiety, I think that's the kind of thing that's subjective and needs to be left up to, you know, users of the site, parents. And, you know, it should be maybe incumbent on the platforms to provide better tools, which they are increasingly doing, to, you know, control, to allow parents to control access to the sites. But that's something that should happen as a negotiation between, you know, consumers and the companies, and not based on sort of a single government fiat where the FTC gets to decide, for example, what's harmful to kids and what's not.
Thank you, Josh. Appreciate the other side of it. Josh Withrow, fellow in technology and innovation at the R Street Institute. It's called the Kids Online Safety Act. Got out of the Senate 97-3, big bipartisan effort there. He says he doesn't think there was a lot of investigation into it. The House is putting the brakes on it. We could take a break. We come back, we'll talk about putting the brakes on moving homeless encampments with Leslie Harris, New Orleans City Council member.
This is Jean Marie Laskus with the podcast Cement City. So there's this election coming up, a big one, and one guy's been indicted. People are talking voter fraud. Democracy itself is on the line. Sound familiar? Well, this isn't that election. This one is in Denora, Pennsylvania, a dying town in the middle of nowhere, where I bought a house and stayed for 3 years. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.